Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Have no place to go.
Good morning, 6:12 in the morning, 720 WGN. Happy Friday to you. Easter for those celebrating coming up in a couple of days. Going to be a cold Easter, though. A little rain in the forecast and around 40 degrees for the high. So hopefully we'll have our post-Easter spring warm-up.
Let's hope so, because we have baseball in town next week.
Ooh, speaking of, let's do the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, item number one. Well, he's formerly known as Illinois' chief executive officer. Governor Rauner's adding a new title, Dave.
Well, let me see. Well, he's a candidate.
Mm-hmm. He is.
He is governor.
Mm-hmm.
Chief executive, new title. I don't know what that could be.
Title.
Father, grandfather? He's already a
governor
grandfather.
Governor Rauner's going to be a grandfather. He said Thursday one of his daughters is expecting to give birth in just a few weeks, so he and First Lady Diana Rauner will go to the West Coast to meet their first grandchild in mid-April. How about that? So they asked him yesterday, Dave, if it's boy or girl. He said, I'm not supposed to say.
Well, he is. That's good politics, right?
Very good politics. So he knows, but he's not saying. All right, number two. Days after President Trump ordered 60 Russian officials to be expelled from the State Department and the closure of the Russian consulate in Seattle, that's all because of the poisoning of a former Russian spy and his daughter in Britain. Russia is now responding in kind. We're being told the tensions between the United States and Russia are almost as bad as they were around the Cold War, the time of the Cold War. So Russia's foreign minister, Sergey Lavrov, said that Russia is going to expel 60 U.S. diplomats, and they're closing their U.S. consulate in St. Petersburg. So that is a very, very big deal. A statement from the White House on Thursday last night called it a further deterioration in both countries' relationships. The expulsion of the undeclared Russian intelligence officers by America was an appropriate response to the Russian attack on the soil of the United Kingdom. And then Russia said, we have the right to respond. So not good. Not good. Tensions between Russia and the United States. Under Armour. You're a big Under Armour fan.
I am a big Under Armour fan, and this story does hit a little too close to home for me.
Another data breach. Do you do most of your shopping online?
I buy online from Under Armour.
Yeah. Sports apparel merchant Under Armour has become the latest victim of a massive digital theft of sensitive information of tens of millions of customers.
I think it also, Steve Grzanich was talking about, it had to do with their other apps like MyFitnessPal and whatnot.
Right.
Because I know I've used MyFitnessPal to map a run to see how long the distance is. It's not just people who ordered stuff online.
Yeah, I have that app also.
Steve, you did a story, was it yesterday or the day before? And we were talking about it in the newsroom yesterday about Google and Facebook, and the data that they have just on your phone is frightening.
It is. The guy had gone through and requested data, or somehow found all of the data they were keeping on him. Stuff that you would, I don't know if you use your drive, your Google Drive.
Yeah.
Stuff that he had deleted on the Google Drive that was still in the history.
Uh-huh.
The history of his internet going back for years and years. I mean, just crazy stuff. Scary stuff.
If you go back, you could find, if say you wanted directions to whatever, Taco Bell or something in 2012. It will show you the day that you requested that, and then it'll map out which Taco Bell you went to.
Yeah. And the Facebook data, he downloaded the Facebook data, and he's an Android user. It had all of his text messages and all of his phone calls.
So even if you delete it, it's still out there.
It's still there.
delete. Wow, scary story. All right, let's go to number four. This is a great story, a nice little feel-good story. Make us all feel great about ourselves. 9-year-old Isaac Chang likes to bounce on the backyard trampoline with his friends, getting ready for his Naperville Little League spring baseball season that's going to start next week. Again, he's 9 years old. He's a fourth grader. He decided to take the ACT and got 35 out of 36 on his college readiness test. He's nine.
Well, plus he left himself a little room for growth.
Right, apparently, right. Do you remember what you got on the ACT?
I didn't take the ACT. I took the SAT.
What'd you get?
I don't remember.
Do you guys remember what you all got on the ACT?
I think I remember it. It was. I think 17 or 18. It was not a good score.
Yeah, I got 25 or something.
Yeah,
it wasn't
bad. I got like
phenomenal.
A 24. Yeah, but back then it didn't matter that much. I mean, we still into U of I, but I wouldn't.
It did for us. I mean, SATs and ACTs were everything. I mean, you took the prep classes. You got ready.
I didn't.
Since I went to college much later than you, Mary.
That's right. And obviously I needed to take that prep class.
It's huge. It's just gotten bigger and bigger. And obviously, going to have to be changing that test if a 9-year-old's acing it.
Wow.
All right, let's go to... Oh, we have two awesome stories to round out the top 6 at 6. White Sox and the Cubs yesterday, Dave, both had banner games. Let's start with the White Sox, our home team here on WGNRadio.com. How many home runs did they have in this game?
They had 6 home runs. No team has ever hit more than 6 on opening day. The New York Mets in 1988, the only other team to hit 6 homers on opening day. It's a new American League record, obviously. In fact, the White Sox, I think when they hit their 4th, I believe that was their franchise opening day home run record.
Good for the White Sox.
So Matt Davidson hit 3.
Uh-huh.
Tim Anderson hit 2. Jose Abreu hit 1. The 3 by Davidson make him just the 4th player in baseball history to hit 3 home runs on opening day. And everybody in Chicago knows one of the other 3 to do it.
Do you call that something? Like a hat trick? It's 3 goals in a game. Is there something that baseball they call it?
I saw somebody refer to it. Might have been the White Sox on Twitter as a mat trick, which is pretty good.
But
everybody remembers Tuffy Rhodes at Wrigley Field for the Cubs in 1994 off Doc Gooden. But he didn't do a whole lot else after that. Matt Davidson, I think, is going to hit a lot more.
He's going to have a good season. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs' first pitch of the Cubs' season, Ian Happ launches.
First pitch anywhere in baseball.
Launches it in Miami.
Yeah, Ian Happ, who hit 5 home runs, leadoff home runs in spring training. He had 7 home runs. He had 5 in the leadoff spot. So he starts the season as the Cubs' leadoff man. And the very first pitch, he takes it out of
Boom,
the ballpark.
And they knew it, too.
Yeah, so we're thinking Cubs-White Sox World Series then, right?
There you go. What are the odds? We'll have to check the
only,
odds.
Only 322 games to go or something
there
between them.
So they're first in first place. All right, and the final one, this is another feel-good sports story. You tell this one. This is an awesome story about the Blackhawks.
The Blackhawks last night, big night at the United Center. I mean, it's a team this was their next-to-last home game. They honored Brent Seabrook. Great ceremony before the game. He played in his 1,000th game. Great milestone. All right, so that's good for starters. Then... And now, before the game, their goaltender, Anton Forsberg, was hurt.
Okay.
And so Colin Delia, a rookie, they just signed him, or they just called him up this week. He was probably going to play tonight at Colorado, but he becomes the emergency starter for the Blackhawks. Hawks grab a lead. They got a couple of goals in the first period. They lead throughout the game. Third period, Delia, who's played really well, cramps up. We didn't know what it was at the time, but he was doubled over.
So who did
he really couldn't stand up.
So who do they bring in?
So they have an emergency goaltender on hand at every NHL game, and it's basically local guys who've played some hockey who are available. They come to the rink, they come to the arena, and they basically hang out.
Do they dress?
Tell us quick who plays.
Scott Foster is an accountant. He lives in Oak Park. He's 36 years old. Played goaltender at Western Michigan University, but that was many years ago.
How about that?
There's been about 12 times that he's been there, but he's never needed to dress. Hung out in the locker room,
right?
The dressing room. Came in the third period. Stopped all 7 shots he faced. And the team mobbed him at the end of the game, a 6-2 Blackhawks
win. How about that? So we'll be talking about that throughout the morning as well. Scott Foster, accountant slash NHL goalie.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
6:27 in the morning. Time for Lou's First Call. Good morning, Lou Manfredini.
Hello there. How are you?
Good. How about yourself today?
I'm fantastic. Happy Easter weekend.
Happy Easter weekend, too. Big plans at the Manfredini home for Easter?
We're all together, which is very nice.
That is very. All the kids are home.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're everybody home, which is very nice. So we're excited about that.
You still wearing your Loyola scarf you had on when you came in here the other day?
I do. I did bring. I don't have it on currently, but I have it with me. You know, it's a lot, Dave. As you know, we chatted about this when I was at WGN. We are a house divided because our oldest son went to Michigan. So we'll see.
We're a studio divided because we have a certain person in here wearing a Michigan hat.
Yeah, I do.
Super
What's up,
Joe?
Oh, I know.
Go Blue. You're a traitor, Lou.
I saw Joe too.
Oh, the shots are coming. Just like Rose's grandma and Sister Jean. All right, Lou, we know you got to run and do some TV, but we wanted to get John from Huntley in here. Good morning, John. You are Lou's first caller on this Friday morning.
Good morning, Lou. Hopefully, good morning. A quick question. We coated our deck a few years ago with that Restore product, and it failed, and we weren't able to get in on the class action lawsuit because it's so complicated. A lot of it is coming up on its own, and we've been patient with it. But do you know of any product that we could use to get it down to the bare wood?
Okay, you broke up a little bit. You recoated what? Your wood deck?
Our deck with the Restore product.
With the Restore product, and it's failed. And so we've been patient, just letting nature take its course. Like, I'd say 75% of it's coming up.
What I would do at this point is spend a lot of time with a pressure washer. And what you're really trying to do is get the wood soaked. So really, right now, because it's still pretty damp, would be a great time to do it because the wood has a high moisture content. And if you can use that, you don't have to get like crazy with the strength of the pressure washer. But really what you're trying to do is get the wood wet to help the rest of the foam separate, to then get it off. Then, whatever you decide to recoat the deck with after that, when you get it completely clean, you're going to want to sand that deck because you're going to want to open up the pores of the surface of the wood. So whatever you decide to do, whether it's an oil or a different kind of decking paint, really gets absorbed in there. And it's important that the wood is dry before you put that on so you get a good adherence.
There you go, John. Is that good? Okay.
Yes.
There, I guess. Okay. Thanks, John, for being Lou's first call.
Sounds a lot like
you Dave. are the winner of one April Air Wi-Fi thermostat, allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home on your home's air on your smartphone. Brought to you by American Weathermakers, home of the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. So there you go. Sponsored by American Weathermakers. Lou, do you have time for a quick whiny staff question?
Absolutely.
Okay, Steve Grzanich has a whiny staff question this morning.
Lou, I had an accident with a cabinet in my kitchen where one of the hinges tore out of its socket. How do I repair this without replacing the whole thing, which kind of would be, I'd have to replace all my cabinets, wouldn't I?
Right. So there's a couple ways to do it. The old way would have been that you would have taken a bunch of toothpicks into the wood with a little wood glue, and you kind of jam it into the hole. And you put a little wood glue on there, let it dry, and then you slice the toothpick so it's flush, and then you screw the screw back in. However, I was just at the Ace Hardware Convention in Dallas, and a guy invented this product called, this is what it's called, Screw It Again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially, if you can imagine a funnel, like a funnel that you would... put oil in your car, or, you know, the pastry funnel that you see the paste, chefs use, where it's like a paper funnel that they'll put the whatever they're decorating the cake, and they'll wind it up and then they'll squeeze it out.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it looks like that. Okay, so it's very thin on the end and then it widens out. You put that in the hole and then you snap it off. And so whatever the size of the hole is, in other words, if the hole was a little bit bigger, you would use a pair of scissors to cut this little cone until the wedge fit into the hole. Then you put it in there and then you screw into that, and it acts like a little expanding molly, but it's multiple size. And whatever you snap off, you can still use the rest of it for some other project where the hole might be a little bigger.
Very nice.
What's it called, Dave?
Screw it again.
Screw it again? Got
it's called screw it again.
Very nice.
You can use it to help all your things in life. There you go. There you go, Lou.
Thanks, Lou. You're a very thoughtful guy.
All right, Lou. Thank you so much, as always.
Take care.
What's that product again?
Screw it again.
There you go. All right, Lou.
Got it.
Thank you so much. All right, we'll chat with you next time.
Yes.
Tomorrow on the Big Show.
Right.
News headlines next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. I've been
stuck in motion. 642. You know, this is the Sister Jean weekend. But as you heard in the top six, with the story of Scott Foster and the story of Isaac Chang, we really have the big three going on here. For those of you who missed it, again, if you're just waking up, Scott Foster yesterday was an accountant. Today he's an accountant. But last night, he lived a boy's dream when he played in a National Hockey League game as the goalie of the Chicago Blackhawks in the third period of the Hawks' 6-3 win and was perfect. He stopped seven NHL shots. And at the age of 36, he hasn't played competitive hockey to speak of since, what, 2005, Dave?
Yeah.
I believe it was 12 years, 13
played,
years.
Yes, he played at Western Michigan University.
And he wasn't great, by the way, and I think he'd admit that. He was an .875 save percentage. It's okay. It's not great. And never thought this would ever come, but it happened a year or so ago. I think it was last season in Philadelphia, or was it 2 years ago now, where the Hawks had to call up an emergency goalie on the road.
And Crawford had appendicitis.
Against the Flyers, mm-hmm. and a local goalie in Pennsylvania had to be called into play for the Blackhawks. It's one of the weird, quirky things about hockey that wouldn't come up anywhere else. It's not like you're going, it's 2 hours before kickoff, we're going to need a punter. It's 2 hours before first pitch, who's playing left field? 2 hours before tip-off, anybody got a three-pointer? But in hockey, this can happen. And in this weird, disappointing Blackhawks season, this is a great story.
They have a group of...
Do you agree it's a great story?
It is a great story. Right, it's an unbelievable story. And it was... There was a moment where he comes into the game. He's coming through the bench area past Joel Quenneville, who's standing there, and he's just got a, I wouldn't call it an all-out grin, but maybe for Joel it is. He was just smiling as he looked at this guy coming in, a beer league goaltender, yeah. coming into an NHL game in the third period. Now, the Blackhawks have a group of these guys, and they always have one at the games available, but usually they just... They sit in the press box. Foster said after the game, he comes there, has a nice dinner, mm-hmm. sits in the press box, watches the game.
That's no expectation of going in.
Last night, he had to dress and then stay in the dressing room until it turned out he was needed, and they bring him in.
I think the funniest thing he said was after the game that when he retells the story to the buddies that he still plays hockey with, he's going to tell them that it was a 30-save, 1-0 win.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope his buddies are drunk because I'm sure they were paying attention.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question. Isn't somebody on the team, didn't someone used to be a goalie like in, you know, baseball? Somebody
yeah, where you can take an outfielder and have him pitch.
Or, yeah, right. Don't they have that?
Well, I don't think you can put on someone else's equipment. You know, like their goalie equipment is really specific to their bodies.
Yeah, but if you're getting to the fourth or fifth string goalie, Mary makes a good point. I don't know what the story is.
Yeah,
do you,
it's weird.
No, I mean, I just know this is a rule that is fairly recent. So there may have been instances where they went down the bench and said, do you ever play? and until they find a guy.
That's how they do it on Patrick's team. They ask the game before, hey, who wants to be in goal next week?
Well, so Patrick's team may have gotten the call if they lost another one.
Yeah. And Joel equated all the new guys playing to opening day. He said it's opening day in baseball and is opening day here for a lot of players.
I don't see it that way. I see it as Sister Jean week. Sister Jean and the Loyola Ramblers weren't expected to get a sniff of where they are. Scott Foster wasn't expected to get anywhere closer than free dinner. And there he was on the ice for the Blackhawks.
I think this is a new promotion for the Blackhawks.
Anybody can play night?
It's fantasy night. We pick one guy or gal.
Well, you do have to have, right, but you do have to have some measure of skill.
You do. You do. You couldn't just take
this guy played D1 hockey.
Right. You're not just taking somebody out of the stands. It has that kind of feel to it, but that's not the story.
It's just so cool.
It is
so cool.
I mean, this guy, he's.
And not only that, he got in, and he played well.
And he's the number one star of the game,
which is fantastic as well. So, I believe the hockey gods are shining brightly upon the Hawks, and this is the beginning.
It's the start.
Of the comeback. By the way, the kid I mentioned, Isaac Chang, who you guys talked about in the top six, 35 out of 36 on the ACTs. Let's just go around the room. Anybody get a 35?
Nope.
Not me.
I got a 25, and I thought that was pretty good. Back in the day.
Dave?
We didn't take the ACT back then.
I hadn't been invented yet.
We took the S.
Did you?
No, it had been invented, but.
I had a 31.
You did not.
Yes, really? I did. I won a $500 merit scholarship, which at the time was all the money in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
31.
Very nice.
I never knew anyone who got above a 30.
I phoned in the entire year, but I was good on standardized tests. Joe, what'd you get on the ACT? Super Joe.
Not that high. No. Nope.
Like, if you took it several times, would it add up to 31? Or 35, I should say?
Yeah, if I was lucky. Yeah.
Okay.
Mary got a 32.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, kick my butt. Grzanich, how'd you do on the ACT? Did you beat Isaac Chang?
Yeah, we mentioned it earlier. I'm not going to mention it again because
it's
pretty bad.
Because I just asked you. What was it?
It was awful.
What was it?
It's 17.
17,
maybe,
but that
maybe,
was...
Maybe an 18.
Did you quit after half the test?
No, I'm not really good on tests.
I'm not a great test.
So you're good during the year, but not good on standardized tests. Yeah, you're the flip of me.
Exactly. I panic.
How about you, Vanna?
Flop sweats everything.
This is really embarrassing. Thanks, Steve.
What are you talking about?
Well, you're asking us all because you did so well.
No, that's not true at all. Uh-huh. I wasn't throwing it out.
Thanks, Mary. Call her.
24,
okay.
It's not good. But we only took it like once back then. We weren't as competitive. I mean, my parents were like, you're taking it once, that's it.
Well, you know what they told me? They looked at me and they said, you're no Isaac Chang. Turns out they were right. 9-year-old kid with a 35 out of 36. I don't know. It's feeling good. It's all setting up for a Loyola win tomorrow night. But in case you weren't, and I wasn't, you weren't at the United Center last night, here's what it sounds like when your fantasies are fulfilled and you get to play for the Blackhawks.
And the number one star of the game from the Blackhawks, number 90, Scott Foster.
How great is that?
Attention to the Blackhawks bench, where Michelle McMahon is with tonight's number one star of the game, Scott Foster.
Scott, last night you were playing at Johnny's Ice House, and tonight you make your NHL debut in front of this great crowd. Describe what the last 24 hours have been like for you.
Well, it's a little different when a few hours ago you're working your day job, and then you're living your dream, so it's fun.
What was it like playing in front of this Blackhawks crowd inside United Center tonight?
I mean, the fans are always great here. It's loud and intimidating, but it's nice to at least be wearing the Blackhawk jersey.
You played in college 15 years ago. 36 years older, making your NHL debut. What's your last thoughts on this entire experience?
Well, I'm going to remember this one for a long, long time, and it's a lot of fun. So.
Congratulations. Give it up, Scott.
And thanks to NBC Sportsnet for that audio from last night. So there you go. Now, I want this guy on the show, and we're not getting any help from people who should know him, so I'm turning to the audience now, because I'm sure he'd like to get back to his regular accountant life and move on with things. Mm-hmm. But I think he needs to be celebrated. I think this day needs to extend.
Text question. Brushes with Scott Foster.
Exactly. Precisely. Have you ever met Scott Foster?
Has he done your taxes?
Yeah, what kind of accountant is he?
I think, is he a tax accountant?
Is he a personal accountant? Is he a business accountant?
He didn't specify that. He's an accountant. I assume since it's tax season, he's probably pretty busy.
Well, but here's the thing. He probably is not getting a full NHL contract. This is a great opportunity to get a plug for his business, too.
Oh, sure.
So if you know Scott Foster, you tell him that we really want him on the show today. And we're only here till 10. So 312-981-7200. Brushes with Scott Foster, or do you know Scott Foster, and can you help us out? 312-981-7200. And Scott, if you're listening, sitting ovation. The rare sitting ovation. Highly coveted. 651, Steve.
Steve, smarty pants.
Andrea asked me. I didn't volunteer it.
I don't know. I feel bad now. I feel like I rode the little bus to...
No. You're doing just fine. We'll fire you later. What do you got?
Go Sox! White Sox! White Sox! Go White Sox! The Chicago White Sox all season on 720 WGN.
How about them White Sox? 14 runs. That's a good start. Let's spread it out a little bit. Let's save a few. A couple of 3-2, 4-3, 5-4, 2-1 wins. We could use a couple runs here and there just to be safe.
You always get a little concerned when you hit 6 home runs in one game.
It's a lot.
You don't want to use them up.
Hey, homeowners say their basement is only trouble when it leaks. Well, yeah. Uh-huh. We had rain the past couple of days. You might even be in denial. You might even be saying, I don't even want to look. You know, it just takes this much. See, I'm folding my fingers apart. This much rain. This much water in your basement to cause you all sorts of problems. First time my basement leaked, nope, didn't call PermaSeal. Second time my basement leaked, oh yeah, called PermaSeal. Had some seepage on the walls once, called PermaSeal. I've used PermaSeal 3-4 different times. And each time they fixed whatever problem I had, and I didn't have to worry about it again. 800-421-SEAL. They offer a free estimate and transferable warranties. So if you sell your house, the new buyers can benefit from Roy Spencer and his crew at PermaSeal. It goes back to 1979, but still a local Chicagoland business whose purpose is to make the world a better place, one basement or crawl space at a time. You know, your basement, it's got to be dry all the time. Not some of the time, all the time. And you know who to call for it. PermaSeal. 800-421-SEAL, 800-421-7325, or permaseal.net. Time for the replay. We're going to make this the Sister Jean, Scott Foster, Isaac Chang show. It's a little long in title. I'm trying to figure out a way to boil that down to something a little more workable. But this is your Scott Foster segment. Again, texters, brushes with Scott Foster, 312-981-7200. Scott, if you're listening, if you're a friend of Scott's, we just want to congratulate you, Scott, and plug your business. So please join us on the show. Yes, David?
And create your own bobblehead.
Ooh, a Scott Foster bobblehead.
Scott Foster bobblehead. Could be big.
Could cut into the Sister Jean business.
I doubt it.
Sponsored now by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Here's the Scott Foster replay.
Scott Foster is in the net for the Hawks. He took some warm-ups in the emergency backup situation, and now he's in as we resume play.
What do you think the butterfly level is right now for Scott Foster?
I mean, he's the third guy in this game to make his NHL debut. There now, line A at the jet blue line right wing. Spins it down, Tyler Myers over the Hawk line, firing for the right wing side. Stick save made by Foster. And he gets a big cheer from this partisan crowd at the United Center, numbering 21,839. Jets come back the other way, line A over the Hawk line, fed it in front. Big save by Foster on a point-blank chance from Stastny. That's the save of the game for the Hawks. Scott Foster, how did he even see that shot? He got a glove on it, knocking it wide. Myers from the left point sent it over the near circle. It's going to happen. Scott Foster has come on in relief of Colin Delia, and he stopped every single Jets shot. And the Blackhawks beat the Winnipeg Jets here tonight 6-2. What an unbelievable story that has unfolded here on United Center Ice here in Chicago. And the boys are off the bench. They all race down to the goal crease. They surround and mob Scott Foster, jumping up and down. It looked like it's the kind of mob you'd see when the team wins a playoff series.
By the way, that is the playoffs this year, the Scott Foster game. And, Seabrook had a pretty good night, too, with a nice tribute to him before the game. Did I hear that Seabrook slipped on the ice?
During the ceremony, he kind of just wobbled a little bit, lost lost his balance, and Troy, who is the MC, turned to him and said, "That was close."
Well, you know, I've been on that ice. It is slippery.
It is slippery.
Ice is slick.
Yes.
There's no question. But a nice tribute to Brett Seabrook at 13 years with the Hawks in his 1,000th NHL game. All right, so there you go. Scott Foster Day continues. Loyola now, what is it, 10 to 20, 34 hours away?
Something like that, yeah, 5:09 tomorrow afternoon.
And a whole bunch of Chicago folks there, including Kevin Powell. We may wake him up later as well. Steve Stone later on, a great opening day for the Chicago White Sox. And we'll get some Elise Glink money stuff coming up as well. And let's give away some Scott Foster tickets, Blackhawk tickets, coming up in a little bit as well on 720 WGN.
She is Mary Vanderbilt. She will update traffic and sometimes weather. She is Mary Vanderbilt. And then sometimes she will do them both together.
710, did you fall asleep in a driveway again? I'm told something happened to you.
Oh, no, I'm fine. A couple days ago, you mean?
No, something in your kitchen?
Oh. Yeah, it was pretty ugly.
Well, what happened?
I had a spill in my kitchen when I was baking.
That generally happens?
Yes. I was reaching for my powdered sugar mm-hmm. to make my ultimate wonderful three-tiered brownies.
Okay.
And I hit the cocoa powder. The Hershey's cocoa powder can, and it exploded everywhere.
So you had a cocoa powder incident.
Oh, my God. But cocoa powder is like, it's a dust. It's the worst. I mean, ask anybody who bakes. Mary Sandberg can back me
up. I think you know this. I was in a band called Cocoa Powder Incident.
But it just goes everywhere, and you can't get it out. I mean, so I got out the vacuum. I started doing, and then it was just made it kind of a little bit worse. But you mop it up, and it smells. So the whole place, it smells good.
So you smell like a chocolate factory now at Charles?
Oh, well, yeah. And plus, I had like fleece pants on, sweatpants, and it was all over my fleece sweatpants. Boy.
It's like a sitcom scene. I think this is the question we need an answer to. Where are the brownies?
Yeah, these brownies were not for us, were they?
No. No, I was baking them for my girlfriend's daughter who just had a baby.
You know that book, Everything I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten?
Mm-hmm. No.
I think you need to share. It's all about sharing. I think you need to make us brownies now.
Well, I'm not...
I mean, your kitchen's already a mess from your spilling.
It's still a mess. Yesterday, I was back in the kitchen, and it was everywhere.
Quick show of hands. Who thinks Mary needs to make us brownies?
Some people might actually say this accident was probably caused because you weren't sharing.
You mean like a curse sort of thing?
Sort of like a karma thing.
Maybe it was guilt. Like she knew she was giving them to the girl that's having the baby.
Yeah, I felt bad about the mess at first, but then once I didn't get a brownie, it's like, well, you kind of deserve it.
I didn't even think of that.
I feel less,
have some left over, but I didn't bring those in either.
Oh, and nothing better than a leftover brownie. I like when they start to get a little bit hard.
Crusty on the edges.
Yeah. And this cocoa powder, when she told me the story, I could relate because I just used cocoa powder to make Pat's German chocolate cupcakes because that's his favorite. And there's
cocoa. Where are those?
I brought those in, Mary.
That was a couple weeks ago.
You ate? Well, his birthday was the 14th.
Yeah.
But I brought in my leftovers, but I was using the cocoa powder as Pat's birthday gift was getting delivered. And so I too spilled some cocoa powder. And it's like cocoa powder has a consistent, it's like air kind of. You can't contain it. It keeps clouding up.
Cloud of chocolate.
Next day,
you breathe it in. Right. Like you can't really. I was spraying.
Well, unlike walking through a Macy's where you get perfumed, I would walk through that cloud.
You'd walk through
cocoa powder.
But what I was trying to do was spray I like to use the vinegar Windex. And I was spraying it into the air, hoping it would grasp onto the cocoa and push it down.
In some sort of odd chemical situation.
Yeah, and push it down so I could wipe it up.
You know, coincidentally, you both had cocoa powder spills, and I didn't bake. So it's almost like the three of us are channeling each other.
It's like your brush with cocoa powder.
It just comes back.
I'd like to be brushed with cocoa powder.
Mine's all over the phone.
It's terrible. I liked Joe, Super Joe, had a funny secondary text question for you.
I have the primaries right here. What was your other text question, Joe, other than what I'm about to reveal?
Oh, would you rather be a goalie or an accountant?
I'm going to go with goalie. I'm going to go with
even
goalie.
During tax season?
Mm-hmm. Somebody texted a minute ago, the reason you're not hearing from Scott Foster, Steve, is because it's tax season. Okay, are you going to commit to your job, Scott, or are you going to commit to the fame you're currently enjoying?
Fame.
Come on. Kim Kardashian didn't get famous because she had any skill.
That's right.
I don't think he really was that interested in the fame. I mean, when he was being interviewed after the game, he didn't seem all that comfortable.
He kind of seemed like an accountant, yeah. Actually.
Well, listen, so we've got two paths we can go down. We can go down the Bartman Road, you know, where you don't talk to anybody. Or you can go down the It's My Big Friday Road, and he can get back to his regular life tomorrow.
That's a good point.
There you go.
Scott, we just want to throw some love your way. Scott Foster. We're looking for Scott Foster, full-time goalie, part-time accountant. Brushes with Scott Foster, 224. I had a Foster's beer once. 847. I knew an accountant named Scott, and I watched Meet the Fosters. Uh-huh. I think that's what it was called. I think it was Fockers, wasn't it? Was it Fockers? Yeah, it was Fockers.
There's a Fosters television show now, though.
Is it called Meet the Fosters?
Yeah. It's the Fosters.
815. My neighbor's name is Scott Foster, and he's a mailman, but I know him. 630. I met Scott Foster Brooks at a bar. We were both drunk. I don't remember anything. 630. I once fostered a Scotty dog for a rescue.
I like those dogs.
These people all practically live with Scott Foster. It's like they're channeling
Scott
Foster.
My sister used to have a sweater that had a Scotty dog on it.
Well, then she should be helping us out.
Yep.
708. I grew up in Oak Park. Do you know him?
Orland Park I grew up in.
Oh,
but Oak Park's a great community.
Same initials.
same initials. So I basically am best friends with him.
If he was Fosteropolis, she'd be related.
Right.
I could be another cousin.
But I went to college with Becky Foster.
What?
So it's like Scott Foster and I are brother and sister, basically.
I grew up in Oak Park and live in River Forest. You want me to hunt him down? How about this listener goes door to door?
I like that.
Just door to door. Scott!
What if he lives in a condo?
They'll find him by 10.
Well, if he works fast.
I could call my girlfriend Kathy Foster. She might know him.
Possibility. 630. I had dinner in Oak Park a couple of weeks ago. I bet he was in that restaurant at one point or another.
I bet.
815. How does an accountant have time to play goalie during tax season?
That's 708. Just a couple hours.
But he has to go earlier than that, right? Because dinner is earlier.
Yeah, yeah, I think he was there early.
708. Steve, I used to know a guy. His name sort of sounded like Scott Foster.
Well, there you go.
Snot Bloster? I don't know the way.
Bob Loster.
847, 6 degrees of separation from Scott Foster. I live in Evanston, but I drive down Foster every week to take my kid to rehearsal.
I don't know.
Close.
That might be a stretch.
Really close. And 847, you're asking for Scott Foster to call. Pretty much guaranteed he's going to be hungover till about 2 today. It could be it. Maybe he went out and celebrated.
Maybe he's partying.
I believe Eddie Olczyk said on TV last night, get him a Foster's.
There you go.
Do they take him out and celebrate? I mean, is that traditional? Like, would the players take the new guy out and to dinner? Or what,
yeah,
what is
probably
he?
Not. In the old days, maybe they would have carried him down the street to a bar. But I think now they just jumped on him on the ice, had some fun, said, hey, man, stay in touch.
He might have walked back to Johnny's and met up with his regular guys that he plays with. He might have had a game last night.
He could have.
They played late at night.
Yeah, 11 o'clock ice time.
Yeah.
Will he be the backup again?
I think he goes back on the list. Okay. Yeah, why wouldn't he?
I would think he'd be number one on the list if he wants to be.
That's what I mean.
That'd be funny if they eliminated you after you played once.
Right. But I mean, you have to understand it happens like once every
season, maybe.
Not even. I mean, it happened.
In the league?
Maybe once a year in the league.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's cool. Scott, we're all about you. Scott Foster. And Sister Jean, you as well. Loyola, tomorrow night, 5 o'clock. We'll do our picks coming up. And you won our last BS contest.
I did.
Yes.
What?
Well, the pool. Nobody's catching her in the pool.
I won the pool.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
Dave, you were close. You were fifth.
There'd have to be an act of God for Andre to lose this weekend.
Scott Foster is going to make
Scott
my
Foster,
pick.
Scott Foster,
probably a good call.
Scott Foster's going to win everything.
Hawks tickets coming up, or as I like to call them, Scott Foster tickets coming up. Listen, Texter just texted in about the ACT discussion earlier, and I think it's relevant. 224. I got a 17 on the ACT. Graduated second from the bottom at Lane. Went on to be a double major in college, criminal justice and political science. Two more postgraduate diplomas from Northwestern. Go Cats. Been a cop since 92. Raised two boys by myself. Just helped do CPR on a kid, saved her life. Test scores aren't everything.
Everybody have a good day and be safe.
Very, very true.
Nice, huh?
Very,
very
nice.
True.
Well done. Well done. 7:19 as Scott Foster Day continues. Scott Foster's sister, Jean, Isaac Chang Day. Isaac Chang's the little 9-year-old boy who got a 35 out of 36 on his ACTs from Naperville. All right. What are we doing? What are we doing? This is a break? I forgot where we are in the show. Now a break on 720 WGN. It is Good Friday. It is a, very important day on the calendar, obviously, but also the start, the real start of Holy Weekend. And listen, whatever your beliefs are, I think whatever God you get closer to your God this weekend. You can always start now. Great time to get together with family. Hopefully you're not cooking. Watch out for the clouds of cocoa if you're going to ride the Vandeveld house.
And bundle up. 39 for the high on Sunday.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's going to be horrible.
Am I remembering this right? Wasn't it like 75 last Easter?
Yeah, it was super nice. It was. I have pictures from last Easter, and we were
nice,
out on my cousin's deck. Yeah, not wearing coats.
How do you keep all your cousins straight?
I don't know, but it flashed back. I flashed back to 2 years ago when I think Greek Easter and regular Easter were on the same day. And it was
regular
freezing
Easter.
Cold. I don't know what to call it, right? Normal Easter. Regular Easter. Or as my family always says, the Greeks always say, you know, the real Easter. But the age-old thing. But we were in coats 2 years ago with my cousin that had space heaters in the backyard.
Well, let me ask you this. Greek Easter's when?
It's next week. So it's 1 week later this year.
So what do you refer to regular Easter as this year? Sunday?
Just regular Easter. Because I'll celebrate regular Easter.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and then Greek Easter as well. Okay. But that's a bigger celebration.
Prepare yourself. I'm going to give you a Chicago riddle here.
Okay.
Written by John DeCoss. And if you're the first to correctly identify who this Chicagoan is, you win tickets to the final Blackhawks home game.
It's
a really good one. It is a good one.
I'm a big fan of this one.
This celebrity?
Yes, this celebrity. Okay. I think Andrew is probably a big fan, too.
I think there's a good chance you're going to get this and Dave will.
I know. I think Mary really? Is a fan, too.
Yeah. Again, next Friday night, the final Hawks home game. By then, Scott Foster probably have a multi-year deal.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm as an accountant.
Yeah, as an accountant with the Hawks in the business office.
You'll be doing all the Hawks taxes.
Yeah. You've got to sit down with Jay Blunk, do some negotiating. Here we go. First correct answer. Cicero born. East Morton School. Goodman Drama alumni. Jewel. From Criminal Mind to Gangster Scum, he started in Bleachers as a co-writing bum.
Oh, okay. I do know
you
this
do?
One.
Got that. Yep.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
The Jewel is the only part that throws me off.
Well, he worked at a Jewel.
And I worked at a Jewel.
Well, so did Nick DiGilio.
I know him. But it was all our first jobs.
It's not Nick. DiGilio.
It's DiGilio.
DiGilio. That's what I said.
He worked at the Jewels.
The Jewels. Cicero born, East Morton School, Goodman Drama alumni. Jewel, from Criminal Mind to Gangster Scum, he started in Bleachers as a co-writing bum. Who is that celebrity? For Hawks tickets.
God, John DeCoss is just a genius at riddle writing.
Is he?
Isn't he?
I think he is. I think he is, but nobody writes riddles anymore, so it's hard to judge.
It's true.
No, he's great. Of course he's great. More Scott Foster. Brushes with Scott Foster. Texts are coming in. Again, we're going to do our sister Jean Loyola picks in just a second. But in case you weren't paying attention, the Hawks called up their emergency goalie last night, a 36-year-old accountant from Oak Park, did we say?
Lives in Oak Park.
River Forest. And he played at the end of the game last night, stopped 7 shots, was perfect.
Played 14 minutes.
And was the first star of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's got brushes with Scott Foster.
But he's gone incognito now.
What if he had a place with Bartman? He and Bartman just got a place together. Don't take any calls.
Weird.
Don't suggest it to their wives.
Steve's in Lake Zurich. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
All right. So do you know Scott Foster?
I don't, but I saw what happened last night. It's amazing.
Yeah, very cool story. Did you ever play hockey?
I did a little bit growing up.
Goalie or another position?
Usually left out.
That's not actually a position. All right, so you heard the riddle. Who's the celebrity?
That would be the great Joe Mantegna.
Ah, there you go.
One of the greatest actors.
And a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
Really good guy. Steve, you're going to the game next Friday night. Final Hawks game of this very odd season. Who are you going to bring?
You know what? I'm going to have to think about that one.
All right. Hold it over your friends' heads.
I will.
And again, that's thank you, Steve. Thank you for listening. And that's Scott Foster, Blackhawks tickets.
Yeah. And you never know. Steve could end up playing goal.
You never know. Yeah. Of course, he didn't sound like he was all that confident.
No.
Yeah.
One more thing. How far in advance did they find out that they're the backup to the backup to the backup?
He didn't find out he had to dress until right before the game, I'm told.
Yeah, he said he was a block away from the United Center when he got the call.
Hey, tax accountant Scott Foster. What?
That's how he answers the phone.
What? Yeah, tax count Scott Foster on the way to the United Center, watching a game, getting a free dinner. Hello.
That's how you answer the phone.
Here's more brushes with Scott Foster. Are Foster Blackhawk sweaters available yet? They'd sell.
Oh, they would.
They'd sell. Number 90.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Didn't he wear 90?
I think, yeah, he wore number 90. Yeah. I think they probably would sell.
They would sell. 847 texter. I drove on Foster. I drive on Foster every week when I finish.
Go see Abigail
Grace. Yeah, when I finish hanging out with Abigail Grace and I leave that area of the city, I'm on Foster.
It's like your brothers.
Does Foster intersect with Scott?
Boy, that'd be cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That'd be super cool.
That's a great question.
And you could take Foster and eventually get over to Ogden and get to the United Center.
Look at that.
708, I'm an Uber driver who once drove Scott Foster's second cousin Eugene to the airport. There you go. 619, I've been to Foster Freeze before. I don't think so. 847, I'm a longtime user of Scott toilet paper. That's kind of the same thing. 630, there's an accounting firm next door. Maybe Scott Foster works there. What do you think, all the accountants hang out together in a big accountant club?
The same office.
Brushes with Scott Foster, 219. Steve, I came from a foster home, and when I would cry, I would use Scott tissues.
Oh, that's good. See, that's cute. Oh, really good. Sad.
You guys are funny.
Steve, can I admit something?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you were doing that Hawker riddle, mm-hmm. I said that Andrea and Mary and I were going to be very excited about it.
Yeah.
So I had read that name, but I thought it was the person that's married to Sofia Vergara.
The hot actor.
Yeah. When I was very excited,
Joey Mantegna. Joe Mantegna is about.
I thought we were
70?
Talking Joe Montenegro or whatever his name is.
Yeah, it is.
Joe Manganiello.
Manganiello.
Yeah, that's who I thought. So I'm not quite as excited for that.
Mary, I wasn't either. I read it and I go, am I supposed to be excited?
I was a little confused. I was a little confused.
But I do like it. He's a great actor and he's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
I think he was in Magic Mike. He was one of the dancers.
Mantegna is a much nicer guy than Manganini.
Manganiello.
And I thought it was Joe Montana.
Oh, that would have excited you.
Okay.
Little known fact, Joe Mantegna was in the WGN radio booth during the Kerry Wood 20 strikeout game.
That's true, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. It's true.
It's like they all know Scott Foster. Look
and
at that. It's like they're all related.
That has nothing to do with Scott Foster.
Joe Mantegna's wife opened a restaurant in Burbank that serves only Chicago food.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Burbank, California.
What if it was on Foster Street?
Oh, that would be too eerie. 847, I drank a can of Foster's with my friend named Scott.
That's good.
727, my middle name is Scott. By the way, Steve, Scott Foster doesn't sound like an NHL player. It should be Svat Fostervich. You know, it gives it that European tinge. 732. Elise Glink's going to tell us a little bit about money and stuff coming up because we don't have enough. You got enough money? Anybody got enough money? Who wants more money? Anyone? Money?
I'll take some more.
Would
you like some money?
Please.
Anyone need some money?
Thanks.
Elise Glink will try to make us smarter about that. Dean after 8. Steve Stone and the White Sox thumping Kansas City 14-7 in the opener. And, coming up at 9 o'clock, I'm going to tell you what it's like to be a doctor with Dr. Michael Young. He's written a book about what it's like to be a doctor, current medical issues. At 7:33, we need a break for the headlines now on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo! Ow!
Love that money!
Money, 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 money!
If you get a chance, if you're at all a Hawks fan, take a look at the video at the end of the game when he stands up in net with his mask on and just shrugs his shoulders like, well, it wasn't too bad, I guess. And the guys just swamp him. Pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Have you ever taken shots from an NHL player, like in goofing around?
No.
I have. I've been in the gear, in the net, never saw the puck. They were just having fun with me. One point they snowplowed me where they spun out in front of the net so I'd be covered with ice chips and just flipped the puck over the top of my head. But I had slap shots going by my head that I never saw. Never saw. So, the fact that he goes into an NHL game cold and stops seven shots, that's pretty good.
To me, that's the amazing part of doing that job.
Pretty cool.
Is that these goaltenders can see the puck.
And you would have thought that the Winnipeg Jets, who are one of the NHL's best teams this year, you know, would have went, all right, let's have some fun with this guy. Let's throw about eight by him.
Right. Well, to their credit, the Blackhawks did a good job of helping him out.
Yeah. It's a much better story to tell that he won and stopped every shot.
Oh, yeah.
We're looking for Scott Foster this morning, Hawks hero. And if you are friends with Scott, or if you're Scott, you're listening, Scott, get a hold of us.
He's on Good Morning America.
312-981. Well, you should do a bigger show. He should do this show. 312-981-7200 is the number. Elise Glink is here. Good morning, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Do you know Scott Foster, superstar goalie?
I don't, unfortunately. Mm. He sounds great, though.
Does sound great, doesn't he? We have several things to discuss with you. Before we get to it, let me remind people, go to thinkglink.com for all your financial information to be money smarter. All right, so the rent shock. You know, the millennials, they're just trying to buy flat-brimmed hats and not listen to their parents and stare at screens. They don't need the rent shock. I saw a statistic from your notes that said, renters can spend how much by the time they're 30?
They can spend just under $100,000, a little over almost $93,000 in total rent between the time that they leave college or they move out of their parents' house until they turn 30. In those 7, 8, 9 years, depending on what it is, almost $92,000 in rent. But what's more important, Steve, is that the percentage of their rent, of the income that they're spending, is 45%. That's pretty hefty.
Yeah, that's tough to make ends meet and have any fun at all with your young life. So why aren't they buying?
Well, they're not buying because they're overloaded with student debt, because housing prices have been rising dramatically. Housing prices are up, not in Chicago, I'll point out, but everywhere else in the country. They're up 40% on average over the last 5 years. We usually talk about that number in relation to what incomes are doing, which is nobody's income's risen 40% in 5 years, at least mine hasn't. But when it comes for, you know, millennials, they're right at the bottom of the pay scale. They're just entering their careers. They're not making very much money, and yet they're spending so much of it on rent.
Elise, stats that you sent were kind of interesting, too. Homeowners staying in their homes longer than ever before.
Yeah, so this is another interesting thing, and we've been talking about this a little bit in relationship to why there aren't any homes for sale in, you know, the country. I mean, relatively speaking, there, again, more here in Chicago than other places, but overall, things that, and I say this, you know, just kind of to everybody I talk to these days, if they ask, like, I'm an empty nester, right? My kids are off in college. I've got one graduating this year, thankfully off the payroll, but I should be the prime person who'd be selling and downsizing, and I'm not. And I'm not because I still run a business. I like where I live. It's super cheap to live there now because I've almost paid off my house, and I've got a really low interest rate. And so it turns out that people who are baby boomers, at the bottom end of the baby boomers or the top end of Gen Xers, who are in my position, all refinanced when interest rates were really low. And now we don't want to move because anywhere we go, it'll be more expensive. We'll get less for our money. And it just seems sort of silly. And so what that's done is really compress the existing home sale market. There's just not enough stuff for people to buy. And so millennials who might want to move in can't because it's too expensive. People who might want to trade up can't because people like me aren't selling. And so the market has, well, it's not come to a complete halt because you've got, you know, you'll probably sell 5.5 million homes this year. So it's not like that's a complete halt. that number should be almost 7 million by now. So that's what we're missing in the marketplace.
It sounds like we're sort of creating a perfect storm for this booming economy, but we'll talk more to Elise about that in a moment. ThinkGlink.com.
I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need.
Hey, Elise Glank rejoins us. ThinkGlink.com. All right, so I mentioned prior to the break, it sounds like we're setting up the perfect storm here. We've talked many times about there being two economies. There's the Wall Street and the rich people economy, and then there's the regular people economy. So based on what you're talking about with volume of homes available, rent being spent, the student loan bubble, that sets up for kind of a dark future for the economy, doesn't it?
It feels like things are heading in an interesting direction. I'm not an economist, just play one on the radio, but when I talk to my economist friends, you know, what they say is, well, people still have jobs, and what really kicked off the Great Recession 10 years ago, and by the way, this is a long time not to have a pullback of any sort, but what kicked it off last time was two things. One was the subprime bubble, right? Mm-hmm. So people all of a sudden found that they couldn't afford their mortgages. They had these super low, artificially low interest rates, and then they popped up. And so right at the same moment that happened, you had companies that started to lay off tens of thousands of workers. And in fact, when the month that Obama took office, if you think back, something like 750,000 people lost their jobs, net lost their jobs that month. And, you know, that those two things together really kick-started that Great Recession, and I think a lot of people are still recovering from that. So when you look out now, you think, well, a lot of people have jobs, and it doesn't seem like we're heading into that kind of a recession. But the key thing, I think, Steve, is going to be interest rates. You know, they're going up. They're now 4.5% for a 30-year fixed-rate loan. They're continuing to rise. It's going to cause trouble eventually.
So sales expected to fall a little bit flat this year, Elise, as compared to in markets, spring markets of the past. And when do you expect a possible upturn?
I don't know. It's interesting. We started off the year pretty strong for both new housing starts and then also for existing home sales. And then it's kind of fallen off a little bit, which is kind of an odd thing because we're right in the middle of what should be the big spring market. People want to sell now, move into their new neighborhoods, you know, come June, July, and get their kids ready to go to school. It's kind of this, we're all still working on that school schedule, even if we don't have kids. But it's not really happening quite the way it normally does. And I think that while pending home sales might be up 3%, we're not seeing any big jumps. So the Lawrence Yun of the National Association of Realtors issued a statement yesterday saying that he expected only about 5.5 million homes to be sold, existing homes to be sold. I think they'd like to see that number a lot higher because when people buy homes, they also buy new carpeting and they buy new drapes and they buy new stuff for their, you know, and they fix up the outside and they plant flowers. All of that has a really positive effect on the larger economy, keeps people employed, more money in people's pockets. And when you don't have that driver, the economy can also fall a little bit flat. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all turns out.
When are you on the radio again with us or with Steve Bertrand?
I'm on the radio with Steve next Thursday, and I don't know when I'm on with you next, probably next week.
You're always welcome here. You know that.
Oh, thanks, Stevie.
ThinkGlink.com. Grandview Homes sponsors our friend Elise Glink. She's super smart about money, and if you have any issues with your own money, just call her at the house. Do we give out Elise's home number and her mobile yet?
No.
Well, we'll do that later. It's a couple of minutes before 8. News coming up, then Dean. And I got some more texts here on Scott Foster Day. Scott Foster, the emergency goalie for the Blackhawks last night, who was the first star of the game, and is back to his life as an accountant today. Scott, we're running out of time. Only 2 hours left in the show for you to come on with us. You know what I'll do if Scott Foster comes on with us today? I'll give him everything on the prize list.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
That's tens of dollars in prizes.
Well, there's pizza, there's app, there's tons of stuff.
There's tons of stuff here. Yeah, that's exactly right. Minute before 8, 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood.
8:13, Dean Richards, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. Just made it.
I was talking to Andre earlier. She said for you, a card-carrying 100% Greek individual.
No, 50%.
Sunday is, how do we, what do we say, Sunday?
Palm Sunday.
What do you call, yeah,
Sunday
palm,
is Sunday?
That's it, yeah, Palm Sunday.
Palm Sunday.
He said, what do we call regular Easter? And I said, well, regular Easter.
Or as my grandmother used to call it, the wrong Easter.
Yeah. Or my grandma Dean, my yaya used to say American Easter.
American Easter.
American Easter, where you just get a choice of cake.
I'm sorry, your yaya?
One. I'm not going to lie that she
Yaya's
did,
grandmother?
She did say it's the wrong Easter, but she, mostly we called it. The,
my yaya. And Papu American is grandpa.
Yaya Boo?
No, yaya and Papu.
Oh, Papu.
You would be Papu.
You would be Papu.
To Abigail.
To Abigail, yeah, yes.
She calls me Pops. It's close.
It's very close.
Yeah, very close. And a lot of people ask, why is the Greek Easter a week later? It's actually the Eastern Orthodox Easter. It's not just Greek.
Right.
But it's the Eastern Orthodox Easter. And why is it a year later? And
a week later.
That's so we can buy Easter candy at half price.
That's what I said. Yep, Monday. You know, for many people, it's the day after Easter. I just call it, go to Walgreens and get all the Easter stuff.
I just figured you guys were just running a week late from cleaning up from the last giant meal you had with all your cousins.
Well, it's mostly because we Greeks are busy waiting on you Americans at our restaurants.
That's right.
Fair point.
With the brunch.
So yesterday, Maureen's watching Abigail, and she wanted to go to get some coffee, and Abigail, this tells you how much the world's changed.
I thought you meant Abigail wanted to go get some coffee.
Yeah, she did. Well, she did. Because,
go to Starbucks.
I like
because
to get a double
here's
espresso.
The association.
Yeah.
She's 2 years old. She goes, cake pop? You know those little cake things at the end of a stick?
Those are so good.
Yeah, so she gets a pink cake pop, finishes it, just obliterates the cake pop. I mean, there's not a speck of cake pop DNA left on the stick by the time she's done.
She's a Cochran.
Looks at her Well, listen to this. Looks at her grandmother and goes, I'd like the black cake pop now, please.
In perfect English. No baby talking at all. Yeah,
you don't get seconds on cake pops? Come on, kid. I believe me, it's a good thing I was not with her because she would have gotten the whole case.
Right.
All right, that's 27 cake pops, but that's the last one.
You'd buy them out.
How do you eat just one? Come on.
Well, you're two.
You could have like a couple, three. It's
you know,
a small piece. Of, it's a think about it. It's like one bite of cake.
Yeah, well, for a grown-up. For a little kid, it's birthday. But you know whose fault this is? Bill Rancic. Because we took Abigail to dinner. Mm. This is last summer now. So she was, a year and a half. And it's the first time she had ever tasted chocolate. And again, it was Maureen. Maureen started to take the spoon away from her mouth. And it was like a horror film where you see the hand clamp onto the leg or whatever. So her little tiny paw grabs her grandmother's arm and goes, wait! You know, and went right back to the chocolate. Because once you're hooked, you're hooked.
Oh, that's... I wish I could remember the first time tasting chocolate, because I have to think it's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
When so far all you've eaten is strained peas, strained carrots.
Well, she looked at me. I was across the table, and she looked at her father, and she looked at both of us like, why haven't I been told about this?
Right? The apple didn't fall far.
What have you been keeping from me?
From that grandfather tree. It's like when we have chocolate in, because you've been good lately. You're watching what you eat. You're eating healthier. But the second we bring chocolate in.
Forget about it. It's over.
It's like the same paw grip.
Yeah, I can't stop.
You got to stop and get her a Portillo's chocolate cake.
And the chocolate cake shake and all the other healthy things that you could pick up.
I'm just a fan of the chocolate cake. I think the chocolate shake cake, the...
A little chunky for me.
That's too much for me.
Yeah.
But a nice piece of that Portillo's chocolate cake, call it a day.
Back in the 90s, when Buzz Kilman was my news guy for a while, Buzz is a big chocolate fan as well, which is amazing considering the shape he's in. But I mentioned that, or I took a call from somebody that gave up the secret ingredients in Portillo's chocolate cake.
Yeah.
Can't say what it is, rhymes with mayonnaise. And from the news studio, I heard this. Like through the wall, he's yelling no, because he didn't want the secret revealed.
I think I've told you this before, that when we were kids, my mom was the mom that would always bake cakes, always homemade cakes, but we had the cakes that looked like castles and rock race cars.
Wow.
And she should have been like one of these design bakers, because she's always made unbelievable, beautiful cakes for all of us as a kid. So there was no such thing as store-bought cake ever. And then I tried the Portillo's, and I said, Mom, you got to try this cake. Store-bought cake, it's not going to be any good. So I brought it over, and she reluctantly takes a bite, puts it in her mouth, swirling it around like, you know, she's a wine connoisseur. And she puts the fork down and looks at me, goes, that's damn good cake.
Yeah, I am not the biggest cake fan in the world, as much as I love chocolate, but that Portillo's chocolate cake,
oh, yeah,
it's something else.
Gene, I'll make you it for your birthday.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Vanderbilt does a knockoff like you wouldn't believe.
Time. It's not good. A knockoff. It's
a knockoff because you don't work at Portillo's.
Okay, but it tastes exactly the same. Some people say it actually tastes better.
I would agree with that.
Let's do a cake-off.
I've never had the homemade knockoff Portillo's.
Well, it is your birthday. Saturday.
I'm sure it's very good. It is, yeah. It's
on Walk of Fame Day, Vanderbilt's going to be serving her knockoff cake from her plaque.
Well, I don't know about that.
Let's see. Justin Timberlake in
my
the
mom,
news.
If my mom was, she would make a cake that looked like your plaque.
Yes, yeah, she would.
And she could pull it off.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake in the news. A whole bunch of movies to talk about. And you got some Mel Brooks you're going to tell me about? Because I love Mel
Brooks. Well, it's not really Mel Brooks news. It's just, it ties in with the whole.
Okay, because I love Mel Brooks.
When you think Holy Weekend, you think Mel Brooks.
Don't you?
Yeah.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 972.
Alright, back to Dean. Before we get to these movies, Justin Timberlake in the news?
Well, you know, he's been in Chicago the past couple of days doing concerts at the United Center. And he posted a video from where he had dinner, apparently, last night.
Oh, is this video of what he's eating? Is this pictures of his food?
Well, it's pictures of him at Alinea Restaurant.
Oh, okay.
That's part of it. You know, Alinea's, you know, maybe one of the best restaurants in Chicago. You know,
in the country.
Like four-star. In the country, that's very true. Because of the creativity of what they do there. For example, they serve as a dessert an edible helium balloon. It's made out of green apple taffy, and they, you know, create a balloon-like thing, and they fill it with helium, and they bring it to your table. Very creative. And Justin did what any red blood American boy would do, inhaled the helium out of the balloon.
I was just hanging out at Linnea, you know what I'm saying? It's not a big deal, fam. I'm just hanging out at
Alinea
eating sugar balloons.
Wasn't I in a band called the Sugar Balloons?
I can see that he's just as immature as I am.
You can take the Justin out of Tennessee, but you can't take the Tennessee out of Justin Timberlake. You know that old saying.
It's one of my favorite things. If there's a helium balloon around someplace, they say it's not good for you, that you're not supposed to do it.
Well, we're in show business. How many more brain cells could we burn out?
Well, that's very true.
All right, Spielberg's got a new movie.
Ready Player One is what it's called. It's an adaptation of one of the most popular novels of the past 10, 15 years or so. It's sci-fi, and it is set in post-apocalyptic Columbus, Ohio, year 2045. I say, how can you tell regular Columbus, Ohio from a post-apocalyptic one?
If I think of post-apocalypse, I wouldn't think or how the people in Columbus doing, but, you know, okay, whatever.
This is set there, and there's, you know, there's nothing for people. There's abject poverty everywhere, so the world escapes from their very dismal reality with an obsession on virtual reality, where they put that little mask on.
Yep.
You know, they can see whatever they want to see and become whoever they want to become. There is a massive platform for this on which everybody plays. You know, they not only play the game themselves, but play with other people around the world as well. And the creator of this system has said that he inserted into this digital world three keys. If found, they would inherit the entire virtual reality world. So it becomes a good guy, bad guy hunt for these three keys that have been placed here. And also kind of a David and Goliath hunt between the everyday average geek and this evil corporation that wants to win, find all of the keys so they can control the world. Because truly this virtual reality thing, you know, is the key to controlling the world.
It's
sci-fi, but also the majority of the movie, you're not watching people. You're watching, the digital people.
Watching the VR thing.
It's like a video game that you're watching that felt so empty to me. It felt like they were pandering to millennials and Gen Xers.
Exactly. Kind of a desperate look how cool I still am.
I think that's kind of what it was, but they wanted to throw something in there for older people. So they set it in this world that's obsessed with 80s pop culture. So throughout the movie, in this good guy, bad guy hunt for these keys, there is one 80s flashback reference visual after another.
Is Andre in it? She loves the 80s.
I do. I love it.
Well, you might like some of that. It is kind of fun to see all these 80s things. But I'm sorry, for me, got to be some story before there's gimmicks and special effects. I thought it was interesting. I think I wasn't that impressed with it. I gave it a Dean's List C+.
Back to a time where we had what we call the landline phone.
That's right.
What?
And a fax.
What? A movie called God's Not Dead, A Light in the Darkness.
This is the third faith-based movie to come out this month. And this one is a story about a difference of opinion in a community between churchgoers and non-churchgoers, churchgoers and the university where this church is located, whether or not this old church should stay open or not. The story is kind of predictable. You know, you can kind of tell how everyone's going to feel about everything. I wound up giving it a Dean's List C.
Isle of Dogs
is the latest Wes Anderson movie. It's a stop-motion animated film.
The trailer looks kind of interesting.
It's a really cute film. I really liked it a lot. I like Wes Anderson films. It's always quirky and unpredictable. But this one's also kind of sweet. The story of the relationship between us and our four-legged friends, told from a very different kind of perspective. Bryan Cranston does a voice in the movie. Bill Murray. It's all kinds of celeb voices in here, but there is a real sweetness to this, and I gave this one a Dean's List B.
And Tyler Perry's Acrimony, I saw your TV review of this. Not great, huh?
No. I thought, when I watched this movie, I thought, wow, he's spoofing Dynasty. This is so over the top, and like things don't make sense, like you would see on a 1980s TV nighttime drama like this. But he meant it to be a serious drama. I asked him about it. He said he meant this to be a serious drama. It's not. It's a story about a married couple whose longtime marriage is about to burst apart at the seams because of honesty issues and betrayal issues that lead to all kinds of crazy revenge scenarios. Only problem is, so much of this movie, how you get from point A to point B is not explained. Things just don't make sense.
That's why Dean's new movie is called Dean Richards, Tyler Perry. What the hell are you doing with this movie?
you got to have things make sense in a movie. You have to fill up a lot of those plot holes. And the laughs in a movie should be intentional, not unintentional, as they are movie. So I gave it a Dean's List D.
Yeah, there's some money saving. All right, so Mel Brooks. Take me out with some Mel Brooks.
Well, I was just talking about the three faith-based movies that have come out this month. You've got If Only You Imagine, which is based on the very popular Christian rock song, the making of this movie. Dennis Quaid is in that movie. That's a nice one. Paul, Apostle of Christ, came out last week. Also very nice movie. That's out there for you this weekend. This God's Not Dead, A Light in the Darkness.
And here on Easter weekend.
Came out this weekend, right? We also have on television tomorrow night on ABC the nearly 4 hour long, but I look forward to it every year, The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston and Yvonne DiCarlo and Vincent Price.
At the time, cutting edge special effects. Right. They'll make you giggle now. Yeah. But at the time, they were unbelievable.
And for my money, the casting coup of the century, when you nab Ahab and Edward G. Robinson to be in your biblical movie.
You part the Red Sea, see?
Yeah, we're going to build this golden idol, see? Yeah.
You're Sodom and Gomorrah, see?
So that's on tomorrow night. A lot of you look forward to it, as I do. But it always now reminds me of this.
Groucho Marx?
That kind of... that movie and the campiness of it now that spawned this from Mel Brooks.
Oh, hear me. All pay heed. The Lord Jehovah, has given unto you these 15. Ten commandments for all to obey.
That's the problem when you have five slabs to carry.
You got to have someone help you. You had to drop them.
He had three slabs of five. He dropped one. It happens.
But I love it just sort of under his breath. Oi.
Ten commandments. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to everyone. Happy Passover to everyone this weekend.
As well. Thank you. It's 8:32. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
I believe I am psychic.
The heat tonight and a guy on the mound that does not have a big fastball. I think that 13 home runs away is probably going to go by the boards this evening.
My first prediction, I am either going to fly or ruin that family's picnic.
Hey, you've ruined our picnic!
Psychic!
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Nostrastonis standing by. Steve, who knows all of baseball, had himself quite an entertaining opener in the Sox 14-7 win to ruin the Kansas City Royals' 50th anniversary parties. Sonny, good news, bad news here. Let's start with the good news. A whole bunch of home runs.
Well, that certainly is good, and this team has some power. But there's other key stats that kind of get lost in all of this offensive barrage. And look, Steve, this is going to be an exciting team, going to be an exciting offensive team. We saw it in spring training, a rare combination of very big power, especially with Matt Davidson doing what he's doing. I'm pretty sure he's not going to hit 500 home runs. So I think that we'll scale back expectations a bit. And then look at the speed up and down this order. You've got Moncada at the top. But just as importantly, you've got Engel at the bottom, both speed burners. You've got Garcia, who can run a little bit. You've got Leury Garcia when he comes in with big speed, and Anderson with even better speed, and Sanchez can run. So what I thought yesterday was a real promising sign. They had seven walks and six strikeouts. Now, I'm just hastily looking through the lineup, and I think those are the numbers. But with seven walks in an opener for a team that maybe walked, I don't know, every 3 days last year and the year before, I think it's pretty impressive.
It is impressive, and it's got something to do with coaching and managing that teach patience, especially with a young team. But Dave, Steve's not wrong. Matt Davidson is pacing for 486 home runs if he plays every day.
Yeah, but I think Steve's probably right on this, that he's not going to hit that.
Well, you never know.
But it could happen. So let's go back to James Shields, Steve. What do you make of his performance? Obviously a real tough start, and then he settled down.
Well, what I liked yesterday especially was, I went and I talked to James before the game, and I said, look, your pitching's going to be your pitching. What I'm most proud of you for is the fact that you're mentoring these young pitchers. I said, this is an entire staff of guys that are just learning how to do it on the job. It's trial by ordeal. And I said, they call you Grandpa for a reason. You're the leader of this staff. And I love the fact that you've taken over and trying to teach these young kids pickoff moves, how to cover bases. I mean, what pitch to make at a certain time, how to soften up a hitter, how to look at the soft spots, and then go right at him. Now, in the first inning, he didn't do that. And then he came off after the second, and he looked in, and he was walking up as Castillo was walking up. And he kind of made the motion like, hey, look, I got nothing to lose. Now I'm going right at him. Well, just that adjustment on the fly showed you all you need to know about James Shields. Four hitters, four runs. You're down 4-0. With two outs in the inning, Gordon doubles. They don't get another hit off James Shields. He just held them down for this team to come back, for this offense to come back. For me, as your number one guy, and he is that, and everybody knows that Giolito will eventually supplant him as number one, but once you have your starting rotation, number one or four doesn't matter. They rotate the number five starter, and one and four start every 5 days. So it doesn't matter if you're 1 or 4. And so McKeeler is going to be good. If Fields does what he does yesterday, and he's not going to do that all the time, but, you know, 4 runs in 6 innings doesn't look as impressive as 4 runs in, nobody out, first inning, you're down 4-0. It went to 14-4. I think that's pretty that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Because he's got the savvy and he's got the ability to pull that off. Now, well, it's what you were alluding to as well. You can't give up 4 runs in the first inning because you can't expect to score 14 every night.
Right.
So even though we're going to get all that excitement you talked about, this has got to be the stuff that maybe keeps Ricky Renteria up at night. What do we do to keep the offensive production of the other guys down?
Well, what you do is you have these young guys step up, and eventually, you know, they're going to have to make pitches in the major leagues, but not consistently before the major leagues teaches them all the lessons that you have to have to be successful. And that's understanding, number one, you can get more guys out taking something off the ball than you can trying to add something. There's a guy that tops out at 95. So maybe he throws it full gorilla and he throws it 97. Well, you miss your spot 95, 97 to the hitter. That's very pleasant these days. But if you take something off and you go to 88, suddenly that 95 looks like 105, and the 88 is unhittable because the hitter moves out. You got him off balance. He goes out on a front foot, can't keep his hands back, and you can't do anything with that swing. That's the art of pitching. And these young guys right now, by and large, except for possibly Giolito, these guys are throwers, not pitchers. They will become that. And Giolito, from the beginning of last year until when he ended with the Sox during the regular season, he showed a maturation process that kind of accelerated expectations. I mean, he was brilliant. He was brilliant this spring, and I have every belief that he's going to be brilliant as he moves along through his career. So assuming he stays together, and that's a big assumption, he's going to be a good one. And then there's a whole pile of guys up behind him. And remember something, Carlos Rodon is coming back. Now, I don't know when he is, but when he does, if he shows what he's shown at spots along the way, then we got another quality, probably the top of the rotation starter.
Giolito's going to go tomorrow, Steve. What do you expect from him versus, and I know he had a great spring, but what will we see from him compared to what we saw, say, last September?
You can see the same thing, in my estimation. I think it's going to be a tough day for the Royals. I think that, you know, the Royals are a decent team. They're in transition also. This is a rebuilding year. They don't want to specifically say we're going to burn it to the ground and then build it back up. Dayton Moore is a very good general manager. He showed by staffing a team that was one game away from the World Series, and the next year they won the World Series. He knows how to do it, but now he has to do it in an accelerated manner. He's not going to be able to do it with draft choices. This is not a great system for them. They don't have what the Sox have, but maybe 3 or 4 other organizations do. But the Royals are going to have to do it on the fly without a great deal of money. They're going to have to do it more quickly, or their fans are going to desert them like they have in recent years when they haven't been good. Yet there is a love affair when this team plays well in this very, a relatively small city. And again, without the big money to perpetuate winning, what you have to do is you have to pick your spots, win for a couple of years, maybe sneak in a series, and then be non-competitive for a couple of years as you rebuild the system. They don't have guys to trade that are meaningful. I look for Danny Duffy to probably go, and I'm sure they're going to trade Moustakas. So, I mean, you know, it's just a question when this team falls out, and Kansas City will fall out. Then they start unloading what assets they have, and maybe, you know, Herrera in the bullpen, maybe he goes and it brings back something. They can't make a Rick Hahn deal. They don't have Chris Sale to trade. They don't have Jose Quintana to trade. They don't even have Adam Eaton to trade. And so with the haul that Rick got back, Sox were able to restock. But Kansas City can't do that. They've got to do it a different way, and I'm not sure. Maybe the international market, they've made some trades to get international money. And, you know, maybe they'll be able to make some deals and restock. But in the meantime, I think the Sox are going to beat them like rented donkeys. And I do believe that it's not going to be a good year for Detroit or Kansas City. I think the Sox get third, and possibly, just possibly, if something happens to Minnesota, maybe they get second. You know, look, it's not a wonderful pitching staff, but they're competent. Miguel Gonzalez at the back end can do it. Not going to be great, but for a fifth starter, he's better than most. And the guys in the middle, we'll see. We'll see what Lopez does. I mean, we'll see what these guys do. We'll see what happens when Rodon gets back. And the question is, who's going to be the first call-up or two? Nobody can predict. That depends on where the team is.
Yeah, it's a fun start. It's just a fun start. By the way, what time tomorrow, Dave?
Tomorrow is a 5:40 pregame. And the first pitch will be at 6:15 tomorrow.
Steven, Steve Stone, I know what a big fan you are of all sports, and I don't know if you caught this last night, the story of Scott Foster. This is the 36-year-old accountant, emergency goalie, who on a number of occasions has been called to have a free dinner at the United Center with no chance of getting in the game. The Hawks, because of the bizarre season they've had, get injuries to everybody in the front four. So now they're five deep, and Foster goes in with 12 minutes to play, stops all seven Winnipeg shots, and secures the win, becomes the first star of the game. It's a great story about a guy that was doing tax work yesterday and was an NHL goalie last night. But with your encyclopedic baseball mind, I was trying to think of a baseball equivalent of that. You know, is there a baseball equivalent of a guy that got picked off the street for a moment, that had his one day in the bigs outside of Eddie Goodell, that we're not thinking of, that we forgot?
Well, how about, is it Adam Greenberg for the Cubs? He had one at bat, got hit in the head, and that was pretty much it. Now, I think he might have picked up another at bat or so somewhere down the road. One point, it looks like he was going to be a one-and-done guy, and he got a head burger for his efforts. So, I mean, it's a great story for the Blackhawks, a great story for a goalie who just was probably praying for just one day in the NHL to substantiate all his hard work. Well, he got it. He got it and was a star. And so if he never plays another game, he's going to be a very happy man. At 36 years old, you ask for just one shot.
Stoney, let me throw a name at you. I think he might have been a teammate of yours. Harry Chappas.
No, he was not, but I was probably one of the few guys who could look him eye to eye and perhaps get a rebound from him. And by the way, Jason told me a wonderful story, and it pertains to hockey, is why I bring it up. He said there's a documented history of conjoined twins that loved hockey and became goalies and played. The problem was 2 5 holes, so they had to retire. So that was the story of Jason Foley, and I don't know if it's true or not. I believe everything he says.
Of course you do. Why would you? All right, I know you're a Hoops fan. You like Loyola against Michigan?
No, I don't. I like Michigan, but Loyola can win because Loyola's on a roll. They've been playing wonderful basketball. They're really fast. I think they're undersized. I believe that Michigan goes to the hoop, dominates the boards, and eventually does them in. Hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, so do we. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Really appreciate the information. As you know, we love having the Sox on WGN. That's a great Steve Stone. And get all your White Sox baseball here
all
season
Harry
long.
Remember Harry Chappas?
I do. It's great, though, that Stoney did a height joke. Baseball belongs on WGN. We'll come back with a few more brushes with Scott Foster and the Loyola predictions. We're going to need a score from everybody.
Okay.
All right? In a moment.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, so I need your scores for Loyola. Joe, make a note of these, Super Joe. These are the scores for Loyola and Michigan tomorrow night. There's really no way that any of us can catch Andrea in our really terrible pool.
No, it's a good pool.
Yeah, well, it's a good pool because you're winning. Let's start with Steve Grzanich on the seventh floor. Steve,
I've got the score right here: 72-64 Loyola.
All right, so it's not close. I like your confidence, Mary Vandeveld.
78-75 Loyola.
Trader Joe.
I got Michigan.
You see what I did there? It's not Trader Joe. It's T R A I T O R. Trader Joe. You see what I did there, Joe?
Traitor.
Yeah, that was stupid. I'll take Michigan, but I like Loyola to keep it close. I'll take Michigan 64-60.
64-60. Okay.
All right.
You saying because of that or because of his saucy attitude?
I think it was pretty funny, though. I think he's funny, and I think the Trader Joe was a little funny, too.
I can't believe he said stupid. Yes.
All right, I'm doing Loyola 77-72.
All right, Dave.
Well, these are the two of the top eight teams.
Okay, we don't need a breakdown.
Right,
what's the score?
I'm going with Loyola 68, Michigan 64.
68-64.
Sabre? I'm going to go Michigan 81, Loyola 79.
Hey, you want to be a lot of points against Loyola.
I'm just going with that.
Aside from the bragging, will there be prizes if we win?
Yes.
Okay. Good.
What kind of prizes?
I'll get back to you. Michigan will lose to Loyola tomorrow night. 65-64. A three at the end.
Ooh.
Bounces off the back of the rim, off the backboard, off the front of the rim, off the back of the rim again, and drops in.
That would be cool.
For Loyola.
For Loyola to win the game.
Who hits the shot?
General Custer.
generally.
Sister, not Clayton Jean, Sister Jean.
Yeah, Sister Jean from the side. She's got a great peripheral thing going on over there. All right, well, I'm going to hold on the brushes with Scott Foster until a little bit later this hour, but we got some great texts coming in. Scott Foster is the Blackhawks emergency goalie who got his one shot last night and delivered. And we're trying to find Scott Foster before the show ends. He doesn't want to do interviews. He doesn't want to make it all about him. I'm not interested in what he wants. I'm interested in what I want, and I want him on the show.
Yeah, okay? Absolutely.
So, Scott, accept the fact you're a hero. And get on the show, Scott Foster. And 312-981-7200 is the text number. It's also the phone number if you want to call the show.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. But I know I'm about one thing I got to do.
Sing 11 minutes after 9, Ramblers. Loyola of Chicago. A month ago, you'd think, Steve, I'll bet you right now, I bet you $1 million you're going to be talking about the Loyola Ramblers on Easter weekend. I would have said, you're out of your mind. No, not going to happen. I think you and I both agreed. We had them winning the first two games, but nothing beyond that.
I had them winning the first. I have to be honest.
No, I had them winning
two. I didn't have them getting to the Sweet 16. You had them in the Elite Eight, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was a leap of faith on your part,
it was totally going by heart.
But you know what?
No sense.
What a cool story!
Other than the producer's booth, we're all on the Sister Jean bandwagon,
except for one soon to be former employee.
Well, Sandberg as well. Sandberg went.
Well, she picked him, but she's not wearing a Michigan hat.
We don't know. It could be a secret hat that's in there somewhere.
There could be,
or sweatshirt,
right? At 9:12, let's say hi to Sandy Price. You can imagine that Rogers Park might be buzzing. And, Sandy, I assume this has been very good for the hood.
This has been very good for the hood. Everyone is coming to Rogers Park.
So, honestly, Sandy, I don't know if you do a bracket or not. How much faith did you have?
I don't do a bracket. I don't. But it has been a bandwagon that everyone has been jumping on.
Right.
Getting behind the Ramblers. They're doing an amazing job.
As long as Sister Jean is driving, why wouldn't you hop on? Right? Right.
Exactly.
So, do you guys have something special planned for when they come back?
Well, the community has been just doing specials for weeks now, and all of our businesses, all of our restaurants, all of our bars, one of our bars in Rogers Park has a cheering nun cocktail ready for the game tomorrow night, and our theater on Sheridan Road is showing the game in all the theaters. Three of the four theaters are going to be showing the game.
Cool.
At the new 400 Theater, and Chi-Town Magpie, which is our local souvenir shop. I talked to the owner the other day. She said this is better than Christmas.
Yeah. Hey, Sandy, good to talk to you again. By the way, so some of the people were saying that they were trying to go watch some of the games, and unless you had a reservation, you were kind of out of luck, and they weren't expecting welcoming with open arms, of course, but not expecting the madhouse at most of these restaurants, Giordano's, the Brew Pub, people just waiting outside in lines to get in.
Very true. It's the next best thing to being at the game is watching the game right here in Rogers Park. And Andrea, it's nice to talk to you. You know what Rogers Park is like.
Oh yeah,
people here are it's amazing. It's a great small town right here in the city of Chicago, and our businesses are doing wonderful. People are just coming into Rogers Park to see what Rogers Park has to offer. Hopefully, they'll come back.
And you have
when the war is done.
And there's some in addition to the free viewing parties too. There's been a couple of pop up stores in that area too.
We need to know. Yeah. Where do we get our gear?
Yes, so the shop on campus, the Loyola Bookstore, they have been bringing in people from all other Follets around the neighborhood, or around the country, I think, just to work at this one store. They're bringing all their employees from all the other stores just so that they have enough staff. I hope they don't run out of merchandise, but the T-shirts, the scarves just flying off the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's exciting times, and all that we want we want two things. We want to win tomorrow night, and we want you to continue to visit Rogers Park, even after all this hoopla dies down.
That's exactly right.
So nice to talk to you. Have fun. Where are you going to watch the game?
Thank you, Steve. I'm actually going to be at my niece and nephew's house.
Okay, well, there you go.
So we're going to have our own little viewing party.
Sandy Price, you're all welcome at her niece and nephew's house. Thanks for being on. Rogers Park Chamber member and the positive impact of Loyola's success, not surprisingly, spilling over into the neighborhood.
How cool is that?
Pretty cool.
That community is alive.
By the way, Sister Jean is scheduled to meet the media in San Antonio within the next half hour or so. Should we carry it live?
We should carry it live. Yeah. We should break into regular programming.
For sure.
Sister Jean's press conference.
That's right.
The other person we want to mention outside of Sister Jean and Scott Foster is Isaac Chang. Mm-hmm. Isaac Chang is 9 years old. And I'm assuming, even though it's spring break, he went to school today. Because he's really smart.
Or he's studying.
Isaac Chang likes the trampoline, likes to bounce on it with his friends. However, when he's not getting ready for Naperville Little League, spring baseball starts next week, the fourth grader is probably reading everything he can get his hands on because he earned a composite score of 35 out of a possible 36 on the ACT College Readiness Test.
Pretty good for a 9-year-old.
It's pretty good for a 19-year-old.
I like how he got a 35 so he can leave room, little room for error. So
for improvement,
for improvement,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 35. Oh, I've got to get serious about my studies. 35 out of 36.
Can you get higher than a 36?
No, there's no 36 plus. No.
I mean, get extra credit.
How'd you get into Northwestern with the 14 that you got?
We didn't have the ACT. Oh, it was the SAT back then.
Yeah. Do you remember what you got on your SAT?
Not really.
You do, too.
And I can tell you this. It wouldn't get me into Northwestern today.
That's a good point.
That's right.
It's a good point. Well, it's like Illinois.
That's the same thing for Illinois. Yeah. You couldn't get in with the 25 today.
Yeah.
Damn, you have 30.
So
Isaac could get in. He could buy it. He could run
Isaac
school.
Can get in any school he wants.
That's right.
So, but at 9, being that smart.
Oh my God.
It's got to be annoying to play with your idiot friends when you're 9. You know, your idiot friends on the Little League team. Hey, Bobby.
What? But here's the thing. So he's 9 years old.
Yeah.
Do you remember a lot of stuff from when you were 9?
Years old for me would have been 1971.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay. So here's my question.
You remember
so
the year.
By the time he gets,
did the math.
By the time he gets to be your age or my age, he's going to have that much more he will have forgotten.
It's a very good point. But I believe, you know, they say we use maybe 10 to 15% of our brain. Mm-hmm. Isaac's used a lot more. Isaac's using a whole lot of his brain.
Yeah.
Big time. Oh. My God. More than probably we've used in our blank years of existence.
You know, the great blessing of not paying much attention is what Dave's talking about. You have more room for the stupid stuff.
There you go. Right?
Oh, I remember stupid stuff from 1971.
Sure. 71, the only thing I remember, and it's only by way of association, is, you know, probably MASH, Carol Burnett, Bob Newhart, and Mary Tyler Moore. So I'm not even sure that was the Saturday Night lineup that early. 1971, long before your parents had that bottle of champagne.
And by the way, I was 9 before 1971.
Yes, you were. But that's the first time I didn't pick up on it. Just, you know,
I'm being honest, before you did.
It was probably Lawrence Welk time, wasn't it? Dick Van Dyke.
That a Sunday night?
And a one and a two.
Was Lawrence Welk Saturday night or Sunday?
Saturday nights.
It was Saturday night?
My grandma used to watch it.
My dad did, too, all the time. Good old Lawrence with
and
the bubbles.
And a one and a two.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
See that on YouTube.
The three-channel universe. Three-channel universe, you had no shot.
257.
Yeah, that was it.
And then there was Hee Haw.
Yeah, and I can do this for you right now.
Uh-oh.
Every Saturday night, my father would watch Hee Haw. Every Saturday night. So I can tell you all about Cornfield County.
Mm.
I can tell you about Grandpa.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I can tell you about Roy and Pickin' and Grinnin'.
Buck Owens.
And Buck Owens.
Mm-hmm. There's a lady with the hat, the Minnie Pearl.
Minnie Pearl, right, with the tag on her hat.
Mm-hmm.
But how many of you remember the lyrics to this song?
Oh, boy.
Gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. Gloom, despair, and agony on me.
Wow, look at you.
Who's having fun? Who's having fun on Saturday night?
Appropriate depressing song for Good Friday. Thank you.
That was every Saturday night. Gloom, despair, and agony on me. You know, I met Buck Owens and Roy Clark many years later. You know, different times. One playing in a golf tournament, another one for, you know, an interview on the show. Told them both that delightful story, and they both went, uh-huh.
Sorry, got a tea time.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, exactly. 9:20, we'll come back with Brushes with Scott Foster, Blackhawks goalie.
Scott Foster has come on in relief of Colin Dickinson.
stopped every single Jets shot, and the Blackhawks beat the Winnipeg Jets here tonight 6-2. What an unbelievable story that has unfolded here on United Center Ice here in Chicago.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Instant rock star, Scott Foster. Not only did he get called up, he got called up in an emergency situation and he delivered. Stopped all seven shots he faced in the final 12 minutes of the Hawks' 6-3 win last night. Which makes him statistically the best goalie in Blackhawks history. Well, okay, it's a bit of a stretch. But he did retire, assuming he never plays again, with a 0-0-0 failure rate and a 1,000 save percentage.
Yeah, I think he needs to face a few more shots.
Really?
To qualify.
Didn't reach the minimum?
Yeah, I think they're...
We should get all of the fancy stats guy from the Washington Post we talk to occasionally.
Neil Greenberg?
Neil Greenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact... Sandberg, put Neil Greenberg on the get list. We should talk to him before the playoffs anyway, see what his assessment is of the Hawks going into the offseason. You made the point earlier, seeing Joel Quenneville almost break out into a laugh when they called Scott out of the dressing room, the locker room, and he came up out of the bench. He had to be just flipping out.
Well, and you know, I thought his... attitude about this. I thought Scott Foster's attitude after the game, where he understood the reaction. He got the joke. Here's a guy feels like he's coming out of the stands. That's not exactly accurate, but that's how it felt. It's a Walter Mitty kind of thing. He's living out a fantasy for 14 minutes.
Us. He's doing it for all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he understood that people... I mean, you heard Troy on the call. He's kind of chuckling a little
Troy's
bit.
Troy's giggle makes the whole thing better. Because he's not laughing at him. He's laughing about how funny the whole situation is.
Eddie was doing the same thing on TV.
It's the best.
It's hard to not do that.
Now, it appears, in some small way, I sort of respect the fact that Scott's not coming on the show today. Because there's a part of me that says, hey, it's tech season. The guy's an accountant. He's got to get back after it. He may be a good goalie, but he's a better accountant.
By the way, another great moment last night we haven't talked about. Brent Seabrook honored before the game.
Yeah, we talked about
Scott Foster. But Eddie Olczyk, during a stoppage of play, Eddie stood up in the booth. They put him up on the big screen. It was the first time, I believe, he's been... Well, I guess he was there for one game, but they recognized the fact that
he is
cancer-free, and the crowd gave him just a huge ovation.
Great.
And remember, he played for both those teams. And he had some real nice things to say about the way the Winnipeg Jets have responded to his ordeal.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, it was really a cool moment.
So in the midst of a really difficult Blackhawks season, this is the turnaround right now. And years from now, we'll look back at this after the Hawks win about a dozen more cups. Go back. Do you remember the Scott Foster turnaround?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Scott Foster moment?
Talking about it.
That's when it started.
There's four games left.
You think a playoff push is still possible?
Well, I'm not sure mathematically that could happen.
You think he'll play again?
No.
I think he'll play again in his beer league.
Okay.
Yeah.
On United Center Ice. Okay.
Probably not.
Okay.
But I do think it would be good next Friday in the final Hawks home game if they give him one last shift.
That would be cool.
I think that would be really
cool. One last shift where he's skating around the ice as people tear up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Scott Foster bobbleheads are handed out.
Yes.
And by the way,
and the coins.
If anyone from Blackhawks management is listening,
and they are,
no charge for these IDs.
No, these are all free. Yeah.
Yes.
These are all free. McDonough for years has said, Steve, just stop calling. I asked about baseball. Is there a baseball story that's equivalent? And somebody sent in the Jim Morris story. Remember the Dennis Quaid movie, The Rookie?
I love that movie.
And remember when they found him, he ends up throwing on the side of the road against a speed gun to prove how strong his arm is?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Not the gun they use in the... Well, it's similar, but it's a cop's gun. It's a neighborhood speed
sign. It's one of those signs.
It's like a speed trip. It says,
you are going.
This is your speed limit.
And he ended up playing for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays back at the time.
He got in a few games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was such a good story and a good movie.
Yeah. So, but there's nothing quite like the hockey emergency goalie rule. I asked for brushes with Scott Foster, and you guys have come through amazingly. 262, Foster, Australian for goalie.
Oh, I like that.
773, I live on a street that's kind of close to Foster Avenue. It's almost like you know him.
Boy.
630, I'm wearing my oldest Hawks sweatshirt. I was at the game cheering for Scott Foster. How great is that?
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
That's very cool.
773, I live on Foster. My eye doctor's in Oak Park. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I wonder if it's Scott Foster's eye doctor.
Probably. Oh. 708, bananas Foster is my favorite dessert.
Okay, there.
Hey, and I'm eating a banana, so it's like we're brother and sister, kind of.
And bananas Foster was a Chicago Bulls washout. Remember that? Mm-hmm. High draft pick, yeah. Never amounted to much.
10-day contract.
Yeah. 847, my first boyfriend's name was Scott Foster.
Wow.
Might have been a different one, but we don't know.
I bet not, yeah.
815, my accountant's last name is Foster.
Oh, that, wow. See, we're getting really close now.
630, our accountant and financial manager, our husband and wife, Patty and Charlie Foster. 847, I wear Foster Grant sunglasses.
Oh, mm-hmm. These are so close.
262, Foster, Australian for Scott.
I love our listeners.
So then that would make him Foster Foster.
That's exactly right. Oh. 847, my dog is a Scotty named Foster, and he once bit Joe Montana outside of Jewel.
Oh.
That goes back to the 820.
It's like the whole show, right in one little text.
This is deep and brilliant, the 773 texter. The Dred Scott decision helped foster the Civil War.
Foster.
Okay.
I don't quite
historical
get
moment, just like
one.
This.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, it's from the History Channel. My 708, my algebra teacher in high school was Mrs. Forster, and we thought she was a real hockey puck. Huh? Yeah, okay.
I don't get that.
331, how much money does a person like Scott Foster make for one game? Zero. Zippity doo da day.
Yeah, but he would lose his amateur status.
Yes.
So he gets, he doesn't get it.
He got
one
dinner.
Penny.
Yeah. He got dinner.
He can't go to the Olympics if he...
He got dinner, and I'm sure he got a sweater.
Could he get royalties, he like days. If they show the game again?
The rights to Foster?
The rights to the game?
He signed a contract, and I think when you sign that contract...
Yeah. You give up all your rights.
He got a participation trophy.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm.
The Blackhawks are very good to those who...
who lend a helping hand.
Yes.
Yeah. Who volunteered?
I'm sure they took good care of him.
Yeah.
630, you might have to wait until after April 15th to talk to Scott Foster. He's an accountant genius. He's probably not taking any personal calls until then.
Yeah, we know. He could take our call today, though.
He's now part of the Blackhawks alumni, is he not?
He's part of the Blackhawks alumni accounting team. Yes,
party of one.
Why don't they hire him as their accountant?
Well, they'd have to fire the one they have, I suppose, but he could be a part of the business office.
Yeah.
847, I have a cousin that's an accountant. Other than that, I got nothing. And 262, I have an accountant, and I've often used scotch tape.
Hmm? Huh? That's a reach. Oh, that's a reach.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's almost like they're the same person.
Barely.
932, what's it like to be a doctor? On a Friday, this is a good time for this. On a Friday, a book for the weekend. That's kind of interesting.
It is cool.
Yeah. From a pal who is a doctor, who's going to tell you a little bit about his book. It's called The Illness of Medicine, Experience of Clinical Practice. Dr. Michael J. Young is here next. We'll do the headlines first after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
945. See the cute kids outside? We've got a whole bunch of cute kids on the street.
You know.
It's an attack of cute kids. Let's go, Santana. There used to be a button that I could push. Where's the button for the street?
I can hear him.
Oh, there it is. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Where are you from?
Boston.
What are you doing in town?
We're here for Passover.
Oh, well, happy Passover weekend. And who are the little ones here?
This is, what's your name, sweetie? Jordan.
And?
Jacob.
And they're taking the moms out for a walk. How nice. Well, you got beautiful families there.
Thank you.
Enjoy Chicago.
Thank you.
Mention the name Steve Cochran anywhere. You can get anything at the regular price. All right. Thank you. It's a true story. I'm not making that up.
Yeah. No, that is true.
Book I'm recommending that you pick up. It's a holiday weekend. Good time to kick back, read. And we're talking about your dad. Your dad sold medical supplies,
right? He did. He sold medical books, medical textbooks for 35 years for Lippincott, Walters Kluwer, Mosby, all the medical book textbook publishers.
And the last time I was with Dr. Michael Young, we were on the golf course with our friend Emil Esposito. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you.
What are you doing now?
I am doing research at the University of Illinois on surgical development, medical device development.
And that's after how many years of private practice?
I was in practice 27 years, and I was in the medical field for 33.
How'd you get into urology?
Well, I have different answers for different people.
How about the one you're going to use here?
The one that I will use safely is that I had always wanted to be a surgeon, and urology was a field that afforded the opportunity to be both engaged in surgery as well as office work, pediatric as well as geriatric work.
Well, that makes sense.
And it was a good blend.
The Illness of Medicine experiences in clinical practice talks about not just your career, but gives real-world examples to what somebody goes through over the course of a medical career, as well as the state of the business, the state of the industry as we know it by the time the book is published. Out and available everywhere, I assume. I can get this on Amazon and everywhere else?
Yes, the book is available on Amazon.com. You can also have your listeners go to GMBooks.com, which is the publisher.
Okay, if I remember right, your dad was a doctor, wasn't he?
Actually, I'm fourth generation. Yes, my father, my grandfather, and my great-grandfather were all physicians.
Was it expected you would be a doctor, or you just were interested enough to follow?
I think that it was a combination of encouragement, but I also, this is what I was exposed to, and I wanted to be able to participate in the family discussions.
And it's been a good career.
A terrific career.
All right, I want to run through some stuff in the book that's real-world stuff that people deal with all the time that you can maybe clear up for some of us. What about the doctor referral? You know, because of the insurance situation now, maybe Andrea wants to go see a specialist. Mm-hmm. The referral's a big deal, not a big deal?
Well, it certainly depends upon the type of insurance plan that you have. If you have a managed care plan, which many people do who are employed, yes, they have to obtain a referral from their primary care physician, which allows them to go to the next step. The issues, of course, is that the patient has very little control over who they can see. Mm-hmm. They may have a friend who had a wonderful arthroscopic procedure, and they want to go see him, but they can't because they're limited by their insurance, so they have to go to a different physician, which they may or may not like, and he or she may or may not be locally something that's easily accessible.
It's a step removed. Listen, I don't want to oversimplify this, but it's a step removed from a socialized choice where we tell you what you get. You do get options in various things, but those options are getting more and more limited
because of
the coverage.
Yes. I mean, if we look at a socialized system, you're looking at the VA,
right?
Where the payment is through a single payer, the government, but they also control the physicians and the facilities. So that really is socialized. In the managed care environment, again, depending upon your plan, which again is usually in hieroglyphics and difficult to understand, you have limited access to a certain number of specialists at a particular institution. And if you need to go out of that,
good luck.
Being the specialist that I was, if I had a patient, and I did see a certain managed care patients, if I did have a patient that had a problem that I felt was extraordinary or out of bounds of what either I could perform or that the hospital itself had the ability to manage, I had to go through significant, often adversarial discussions with the medical director of the insurance company to grant that approval.
Sure. I want to ask you about bedside manner, but what are your thoughts on treating friends? Or if Steve says to me, "Hey, you know, you have to go see Doc." Are you good with that, or are you not? Or would you rather say, you know what, I'm too close to you, you know, as a friend, and if you have to give me bad news, you don't want to be the one to give it to me? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a really good question, and I think part of it has to do with the relationship that you've already had established with that person. I have had a number of friends come to me for advice, and they wanted procedures. Some of them were very simple, such as vasectomies. Mm-hmm. There was little likelihood of complication. Mm-hmm. I think patients who had more complex problems, malignancies, etc. Yes, in those cases, I would take a step back.
You're so kind and you're so nice, and so many people are just, you know, so close with their physicians. And I'm asking this very seriously. Do they teach you bedside manner, or is that just kind of learned?
I think that is who you are.
Okay.
You can show somebody how to do something, but whether or not they're able to actually implement it,
right,
and whether or not they have the empathy and they can demonstrate that they truly care, I don't think you can teach that.
I want to ask, too, what do you think of these shows? There's so many medical shows out there now, and I know, you know, not every doctor is dating another doctor, and there's, you know, relationship drama like, say, Grey's Anatomy or whatever.
What? Grey's Anatomy isn't all true?
What do you think of these medical shows? Do you look and laugh and just say, oh, my God, that would never happen? Or what do you think it's kind of an unrealistic approach to what we see?
Again, I've been in medicine for 3 decades, and I have never seen the conundrums.
Yeah,
the problems, the complexity of interpersonal dilemmas that occur in these shows.
We talked about this when we played golf. The real story behind anything as specialized and as, in quotes, glamorous as flying an airplane, being a doctor. You have boring days at work like the rest of us have, you know, being a talk show host, all of that. There's certain things that come routine, but we're all blessed to be doing what you've done in your life, what I've done in mine, what Andrea does, mm-hmm. to be doing something you choose to do and something that you have skill in. Let's talk about the urology practice again for a second. Sexual dysfunction. There are commercials on now every 12 seconds about sexual dysfunction. Has the market overtaken the illness, or is it literally that? And maybe it's not an illness, the condition. Or is the condition that widespread where it's worthy of all the marketing?
Well, I would say that unlike any other medical problem I've ever treated, if we look at the Viagra era, Viagra was released in...
Which you write about in the book, by the way.
Yeah, Viagra was released, it was FDA approved in March of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that it struck me at that time was that not only had we seen a new drug come about to treat a real problem, but this drug created its own need. And that's unlike any other drug I've ever seen before. If you have hypertension, you're given medication. Asthma, you're given medication.
Sure.
Here, you're being told. It's being advertised. And I would see patients in my office who, you know, these are 80-year-old men with an oxygen tank behind them who could barely walk a step, who, because of the advertising and the marketing...
I'd like one more swing at the plate.
They demanded it. But I also had 25-year-old men who had a misfire. And they were calling, clamoring for the drug because they were told they needed it. So I think to answer your question, Steve, the industry sort of created the drive.
Yeah, which is interesting, right?
Which it is there. I mean, there's no question there's a role for it. But... And yes, every 12 seconds there's an advertisement. It is.
Is there something new?
Well, I think there are variations of a theme.
And degrees of difficulty. You write in the book about an injectable, which kind of makes my eyes water just reading what you wrote in the book. But I know some people that works very well.
Well, yes, there are alternatives. The injectables actually preceded the oral.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, and it preceded the oral agents. And there are multiple oral agents, and they have different absorption, different length of time of efficacy.
And when you think about a quality life, this is a big deal and something that can really help fill out the life. Speaking of pharmaceuticals, the opioid crisis crisis isn't a big enough word. How much does the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry have to take responsibility for this?
Well, I certainly think it's become easier to prescribe. It's become the physicians have been motivated, if you will. They are constantly being bombarded by drug reps promoting their wares. And so I think if it is easier to do so, the rest will follow.
Sure, naturally.
But we also live in a society that wants, you know, a doggy downer and a doggy upper.
And we want it fixed today.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines in your book, this goes back to a teaching question, too. Teaching a young surgeon to cut here and repair something else there is tedious but achievable. Teaching that same young person the judgment to know whether to operate is difficult. So can you expand on that a little bit? So judgment is basically learned as you go?
No, I don't think judgment is learned. I think you can instruct somebody on a physical task.
Okay.
I can put a scalpel in somebody's hand as an intern and watch them for 5-6 years develop in terms of their perhaps their knowledge of where to put the knife, but whether or not to use the knife to make the decision, does somebody need surgery? Very hard to teach, and I honestly don't know if you can. That is something you either have or you don't.
That's interesting.
Comes from the experience, which you lay out beautifully here. The illness of medicine, experiences of clinical practice. Dr. Michael J. Young, now doing his research at the University of Illinois and playing golf with our friend Emil Esposito. Get 2 copies of the book. You're careless, you'll lose one, and if you're sick, you're going to go, Steve, what'd I do with my book? But you do. You lay out the positives, reasons to be optimistic, and a lot of stuff we need to clean up here as well. Well done by you.
Great. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for being on. Michael J. Young, The Illness of Medicine. John DeCoste with a tribute to Scott Foster before we wrap things up next on 720 WGN.
Over the hawk line, firing for the right wing side. Stick save made by Foster. And he gets a big cheer from this partisan crowd at the United Center.
Foster's Australian food.
Oh, what is he?
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720
WGN. I'm sure WGN. Bill and Harry will talk a lot of Scott Foster. But John, would you like to, John DeCoste, would you like to end
the
show?
Good morning, everybody.
We're way late here, John. Would you like to end the show with a Scott Foster thought or two?
I would love to end the show with my little song to Scott Foster, short and sweet, but I think it means a lot to him, and I'm sure he'll play it for his family around the holidays.
Whenever you're ready.
Here we go. Scott Foster. Stumble from my desk. Have I made the right decision? Set aside my forms. Take a break from tax revision. Shake and sweat. And then I start to cry. Jump into the shower, my heart begins a-thumping. Gonna take a shot from a guy named Dustin Bufflin. But I'm really just a guy who works from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. That is how I make my living. And my thighs won't stretch. But a fly I won't be given. My name is Scott Foster. Drinking Foster beer to survive. And I think I'm about to die. That's it.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Scott
Foster. Hard to rhyme with Bufflin.
Blackhawks legend. Thank you, John.
Very nice.
You are welcome.
Well done. By the way, I called John 20 minutes ago and go, hey, make up a song. Will you?
And he did. He's had that Scott Foster song for years. Just waited for him to get in the game.
Last texter, Foster Brooks played a drunk. Scott Foster played against drunks in beer league. Same guy.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you doing today?
Harry has a great idea about the Ten Commandments.
All right, we'll stand by for that.
It's topical.
It's topical because of the holiday.
Because it's Easter.
Because of the holiday.
Right. So which the question is for you, for the listening audience at WGN, which of the Ten Commandments needs to be Plutoed?
Which one are you going to get rid of?
Do you want to release the 10 to 9?
One of them, yeah, one must go. Which of the 10 commandments must go? And John DeCoste has written a song about it. He's going to call up and share that with us.
The skies look perfectly blue. I'm wondering when the lightning will roll in for you two. Happy Easter. See you Monday.